going to let Brian have a 2-minute reply to Aubrey and then Aubrey a final reply to Brian. So, thank you.
I think two issues come out this afternoon. One is the issue about social justice and inequality, and the other is about futurology. I think the sort of changes that Aubrey has in mind are obviously going to take place within the developed world. They're not going to take place in the Congo or Zimbabwe or other impoverished third world societies. So the point of my argument was to say that I think that in the present economic crisis, there is a sort of an Americanization of healthcare going on globally. And, you know, America is the most developed society that we have, but it's ranked 36th in the league of life expectancy. Aubrey mentioned one or two personal items about his mother and his own sort of views of health and so forth. So I was just going to say to you that living in America at the moment, I spend $1,000 a month in healthcare insurance, but my health bill on top of that in the last 18 months has been $34,000 for healthcare. Now, that I think is quite a good indication to the gentleman at the back of what the costs of these sorts of changes are going to be. And they raise huge problems about social redistribution, which I think Aubrey gave the best defense possible of this kind of position, but I don't think he's really addressed the question of scarce resources or redistribution. And the second thing we all need to think about is that if the project of good health and longevity were to be successful, we really need to conceptualize what a post-human society would look like, because the sorts of changes that would follow or will follow from these medical interventions will be absolutely huge in terms of family structure, intergenerational politics and justice, questions about ethics and religion. The whole thing, I think, will change very, very radically, and I don't really see anybody, either from the social sciences or the medical sciences, actually conceptualizing those changes very adequately. So, I mean, I think this series of talks presumably is a way to get to that position.
Yes, I think Brian has highlighted something that I'm grateful for highlighting, because it's something that I didn't leave out. I mentioned extensively the issue of distribution of availability of these medical advances within the industrialized world, but I neglected to discuss how things would work globally. And I think that it's absolutely correct that the same argument does not work, that the argument, that a different argument needs to be put forward to predict, or at least to be optimistic about, the redistribution and the distribution of this therapy across the developing world. But there are two big problems. There are two big issues that need to be raised in that. One of them is the developing world may actually get these therapies relatively quickly relative to how one might initially predict, simply because they have a high mortality rate in early life from malaria and so on. So in other words, this is in that sense a good thing, that the incidence of early mortality. So what it means is that there are relatively few people in those countries that get old enough to need therapies against aging, so they will be relatively inexpensive to provide to. Now, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean the money will actually occur, but if what we see today in terms of the public pressure to, for example, reduce the cost of drugs against HIV in sub-Saharan Africa is anything to go by, then I think it would be premature to come to a confident, pessimistic conclusion about this. And HIV is actually the topic of the other point I want to make, because it's one of the best ways to highlight the attitudinal difficulty that holds back healthcare in, and indeed other sorts of care for that matter, in the developing world. You know, it would be pretty tricky to become Prime Minister of the UK if you were publicly disavowing the connection between HIV and AIDS, or to stay as head of state for more than about 10 seconds after such a view became publicly known. But as we know, South Africa had exactly that experience. So we must ask ourselves why. And I think the only viable answer is that they just don't think quite the same as we do about death. And the first thing to do, in my view, in order to really change healthcare and longevity in the developing world, is to change the attitude of the citizens of the developing world to their own health. That's all I want to say.
It's just left to me to say thank you very, very much to Brian Turner and Aubrey de Grey, our speakers, also to Deborah Dunn-Waters, our chair. Just briefly mentioning HIV, our next seminar, which will be held in June, is entitled Playing by the Rules, Growing Older After the Sexual Revolution. We have one speaker confirmed already, Professor Graham Hart at UCL, who will talk about being 70 years old and ageing with HIV. So please do come to that. There is a wine reception out in the foyer. Hopefully it's appeared as if by magic. Please do stay around and contribute to our discussion. And thank you very much, all of you, for coming. Thank you.